You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. It is said that politics is the art of the possible. It is the art of compromise. You wouldn't learn that if you were actually observing the political situation in the United States today. You would not conclude that it is the art of compromise. Perhaps ideally it still is, but it has a role in our human affairs, a very important role in our human affairs. It's simply the process of how people do things together as a group. Whether that group be a group of Americans or any other nation, politics is a necessary part of our existence. But what happens when politics becomes your religion? When politics is, in essence, for all intents and purposes, your highest hope, your God, so to speak. Joining us to talk about politics as religion on this Tuesday afternoon, July the 17th, Dr. Samuel Gregg, a research director at the Acton Institute and author of several books, including Becoming Europe and For God and Profit, and a recent column for the Catholic World Report titled How Politics Becomes Religion. Dr. Gregg, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me on. It's good to be with you.
You call this the absolutizing of politics, and you say that it happens both on the left and the right, among people who are secular and among people who are religious. Which concerns you more?
Well, I think historically speaking, we'd have to say secular-minded people who basically bring a religious mindset, inspiration to the way they think about the political order. Because historically speaking, if you look, who are examples of this? Well, communism is a very good example of this. Marxism is a good example of this. National socialism is an example of this. And in all those cases, it produced mass death, mass suffering, tyrannical regimes, etc. And I think that's because with a secular person who absolutizes politics and basically invests in it, all the natural religious inclinations that don't go away when you abandon faith or religion, there's nothing there in the way that they look at the world to put a limit on what they're trying to realize. The religious believer at some level knows, at least the Christian religious believer, knows that at some level that the kingdom of God is always somewhat beyond us, that it can't fully be realized in the here and now, and it certainly can't be realized by human beings by themselves. A secular-minded person, let's call them someone who's a secular humanist, doesn't have that type of inbuilt limitation. So the religious inclination that all of us have, because all of us are inclined to think about the ultimate and to wonder how that relates to how we order our actions and choices in the world, a secular-minded person doesn't have that constraint, if you like, that intellectual constraint on the way that they think about how you make a better world. So I think at least historically speaking, and I think logically speaking, it's more the secular-minded person when they make politics their religion, when they absolutize politics, when they sacralize politics, whether it's from the left or the right. I think in many respects, they're much more dangerous than religious people who fall into the same trap. That's not to say that religious people make some bad mistakes when they do that. They certainly do. I'm just suggesting that historically speaking and logically speaking, the outcomes are likely to be worse with a secular-minded person.
Let's take communism as an example that you laid out just a moment ago. What is the goal, the religious goal, so to speak, the telos that the thoroughgoing communist had in mind when he set to essentially, as you say, kind of emanatize the eschaton, bring about the kingdom of God, and they wouldn't say God, but the kind of, for lack of a better word, the utopian state. What was their goal?
Yeah. Well, really, the goal of communism was to basically bring about a type of heaven on earth, because it takes things like the notion of hope, which is something deeply Christian. It takes a way of looking at the world. And it basically says, well, we're going to end up in a world where everything is basically perfect. There is no more tension. There is no more division. There is no more alienation in society. And if you think about Marxism in that way, it's a bit of a pseudo-religion. In fact, the more you look at Marxism, the more you realize that it sort of apes Christianity. If you think about it, for example, communist regimes had sacred books, like Das Kapital. Communist regimes had prophets, like Marx and Engels. They had their own ecclesiastical organization called the Communist Party. They had their own hierarchical clergy, so party members, central committee, politburos, etc. They had their own theologians, you know, Marxist theoreticians. They had their own saints, people like Che Guevara. And of course, they had their own doctrines from which you could not stray without compromising your orthodoxy. And, you know, their vision of the end times was the New Jerusalem of communism. And the more you look, I think the more obvious the types of parallels that you find between Christianity and Marxism, in as much as Marxism is a type of pseudo-religion. And of course, the difficulty with that is that the way it viewed the world was that to realize the end goal of communism, you could do pretty much whatever you wanted to do. So killing people, sacrificing your life for the party, engaging in all sorts of terroristic acts, et cetera, et cetera. When you look at it, you realize, wow, that then it is becomes a type of religion that justifies anything that will realize the end goal, which is this type of heaven on earth. And that's its essential religious character. And because it's a pseudo-religion, it can't provide what, say, Christianity does. It basically takes everything from Christianity and secularizes the whole thing. And that makes it very dangerous, because Christianity is not meant to be secularized. It loses its very meaning when it's secularized and becomes something very, very different.
Another example that you cite is, or are, the various forms of liberation theology that were popular several decades ago, especially in the global South. Talk about that, and especially how the end of that actually turned out to be a loss of faith.
Well, what's interesting about liberation theology, and let's keep in mind there's lots of different forms of liberation theology. Some are more or less compatible with Christianity, some are clearly not. And the ones that aren't are the ones that are based heavily upon Marxist analysis. And what that does is that when you embrace Marxist analysis, the risk is that theological reflection will basically collapse into politics. So everything becomes political. The language of faith collapses into the language of the social science. The whole transcendental dimension of Christian salvation goes away. Why? Because Marxist analysis, by its very nature, is grounded in atheism and philosophical materialism. So once you take away belief in God, or you marginalize belief in God, or when you take something like the necessity for people acting in a just way and you absolutize it, which is more or less what Marxist analysis wants you to do, it strips Christian faith of its unique substance. You drain away the transcendental dimension that Christianity is all about. And by definition, when you do that, you reduce Christian faith and morality to very, very secular forms of thinking and acting. And once you get to that point, it's only a short step before you abandon Christian faith altogether. And in the article, I talk about a priest friend of mine who wrote in an article a few years ago. He said this when he's writing about liberation theology's impact upon Latin American Christianity. And he said this, he said, quote, "My students who are lay people and clergy in Latin America give testimony to their experience in their parishes. Whenever and wherever liberation theology has entered, people have lost their faith." And that's the trajectory that Christianity goes the moment you try and absolutize politics and you essentially empty out Christian faith and replace it with political agendas, political aspirations, political goals.
You also point out that when Christianity absolutizes politics, it also has a tendency to do what you call to prudentialize the absolute. What do you mean by that?
Well, in Christian moral teaching, when it comes to doing the good, there's usually lots of different ways of doing it. So, for example, when it comes to dealing with issues of poverty, there's no one Christian way of dealing with poverty. Christians can legitimately disagree among themselves within certain parameters about whether, for example, foreign aid is a good approach to poverty or welfare states are a good approach to poverty. These are prudential issues that the Christians are free to disagree about among themselves, and I don't think that can be stated enough. Most questions of public policy, for example, really are questions of prudential judgment for Christians. But when you absolutize those, one of those, and you say, no, anyone who disagrees with me about the minimum wage is straying from Christian orthodoxy, that is a sure sign that they're not really paying attention to those things that genuinely are a matter of binding obedience, so to speak. It means that they're willing to prudentialize those things. In other words, they're willing to prudentialize some very, very serious Christian teachings about things like life and death, beginnings of life, end of life, questions of religious liberty, etc. And when you prudentialize those, that tells me that the core truths of Christianity are no longer very important to you, that you've become much more focused upon realizing certain policy goals in the here and now at any expense. So that tells me when someone does it, when they talk like that, when you run into the Christian social justice activist who clearly could care less what you believe about Christ's divinity, but insists that unless you support this particular piece of legislation on foreign aid, you're a bad Christian. That tells me that politics and particular forms of ideology have become their real religion, and Christian faith is basically a backdrop to all that that is quickly fading away.
We're talking about politics as religion. Dr. Samuel Gregg is our guest of the Acton Institute. When we come back, his evaluation of the over-the-top American political situation today in light of what we've been discussing.
Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests address these topics at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. the 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Issues Etc. returned to the air on June 30th after being canceled by the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod during Holy Week of 2008. For a special 10-year anniversary donation of $100 or more, we'll send you a CD of Issues Etc. listeners' top 12 hymns. You can make an anniversary gift online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about politics as religion. Dr. Samuel Gregg is our guest, research director at the Acton Institute. Now, where else do you have the opportunity to meet and hear Anthony Esselin, Ryan Anderson, John Warwick Montgomery, Mark Kaltoff, Beverly Yonke, and Chris Roseborough during the course of 2 days and in one location? Well, you can at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November the 9th and Saturday, November the 10th in Dallas, Texas. We're taking the show on the road down there, our Issues Etc. conference in Dallas, Texas, November 9th and 10th. Now, attendance, as usual, is limited to 400. Early bird registration is $110. That includes three meals. You can learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Fall Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dr. Gregg, if you would evaluate the kind of over-the-top American political situation today in light of this discussion of politics as religion.
Well, I think it reflects deep polarization. That's no news to anyone. But I also think it tells us that there are many people in politics who basically have invested politics with religious-like expectations, religious-like hopes. And often that's because politics or particular political ideologies, that's their real faith. They're not really interested in religion properly understood. They're not really interested in Christianity properly understood. They are primarily focused in everything they do upon political goals. And so when those goals aren't realized, which is inevitable to a certain extent because there's no heaven on earth, human beings are free, they make mistakes all the time, there's no such thing as perfect justice in this world. So when you run into a situation whereby suddenly you can't get everything you want, that the political ideology is not delivering on what it says it delivers, when it's clear that not everyone agrees with you, not everyone apparently sees the blinding truth of whatever your political position is, then you start to get angry. And you start to identify people as enemies, as obstacles to realizing whatever the political goal happens to be. And I think that's what we're seeing in a lot of American politics today. I think it's primarily the political left, less so on the political right, although it's there as well, but I think it's more on the political left because that's precisely where you see the biggest drop-off in religious practice and religious faith. And so you see there people investing religious-like expectations and ways of viewing the world, because we don't, you know, when we lose our faith or we have no knowledge of religion, it's not as if we suddenly lose the desire to know about the ultimate and how to order our lives correctly. We are basically wired for religious questions. And so when people lose religious faith, that religious inclination, that religious energy gets diverted into other things. And one of those things is politics. And so we shouldn't be surprised that people start using language that's almost akin to a type of holy war when they talk about political issues and political debates.
How would you respond to someone, and this is, I think this is kind of two general camps, at least among the chattering classes that are prominent in the media, that would say, they would break into two different camps. They would say, well, we weren't like this before, on the one side, 8 years of President Barack Obama, or on the other side, we weren't like this until the last several years of the Trump administration. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would argue that these things have been a long time coming. This trend has been a long time coming because we've seen political and cultural polarization taking off a long time, actually, before the Obama administration, before the Trump administration. You only need to go to colleges and universities and to see what they're like. This sort of language, this way of looking at the world, pre-existed Donald Trump and pre-existed Barack Obama. And what we're seeing now is this way of the world, viewing the world, becoming much more widespread in a more general culture. So outside, if you like, the chattering classes, outside the world of the colleges and universities, outside the world of literary magazines, etc., and it's becoming much more commonplace. And so the Obama administration and the Trump administration, I mean, in a sense, they're sort of vehicles for this type of language and way of looking at the world, because we're finding that for many people, their real religion, it turns out, is ideology. And people are becoming much less shy about thinking and talking that way as religious practice declines in different parts of society.
You discuss desacralizing politics. How does this happen?
Well, I think one way of doing it is for the church to correctly situate politics vis-a-vis how it understands the world. Now, Christianity teaches that politics is very important. Politics is how we make important decisions about how societies, political communities, nations live together. When they disagree about important issues, politics is how we think about what the government should do and shouldn't do, etc. But it seems to me that one thing that the church can do to desacralize politics is, first of all, emphasize that most policy issues are prudential. That's the first thing, which means we don't go to war over every single political issue that we happen to feel strongly about, especially if most notably when they're prudential. The second thing, I think, would be for the church to talk about politics as a sort of relative exercise, that there's no ultimate justice in this world, that there's no perfection in this life, that the kingdom of heaven is sort of among us, but it's also something that will be only fulfilled at the end of time. So the church speaking correctly about politics and its place in the Christian life, I think, has a significant role to play. For those people who are secular or who are skeptical of religion, religious claims, one thing I would suggest is that they look at the world and realize we live in an imperfect world. Human beings are imperfect. You only have to look at your own life. You only have to look at the lives of other people. Just look at history. There is no heaven on earth. And when you see that and you understand that, and then you look at history and see what happens when people try to realize heaven on earth, which usually ends up in concentration camps, in ghettos, in gulags, etc., and totalitarianism, then you're much less likely to invest politics with religious-like expectations. So there's work I think that Christians have to do. There's work that the church has to do as a whole. But there's also work I think that people of a secular mind need to do when they think about the role of politics. And when you accept that, well, you know, utopianism is dangerous, then I think you'll find a lot of people will be far less invested in politics in terms of giving them meaning in life.
Two final questions for you, Dr. Gregg. Why the staying power of this tendency? Why, given the long and bloody history of absolutizing politics, if only in the examples of communism that you cited earlier in our conversation, why do people continue to default to this way of thinking politically?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One is this problem of investing religious inspiration and hopes and expectations in politics. I think a second thing is that we have forgotten that there's many things in life that are not resolvable by politics because they're more appropriately handled by other segments of society. Sometimes some of these problems are resolved through commerce, sometimes they're resolved through civil society, sometimes they're resolved through religious organizations, etc. But we keep falling into this trap because of this absolutize, this religialization, if you like, this sacralization of politics, but also because we look around the world, and this is a sort of a good reason, is we want to fix things. We want to be just. We want to live in better societies. But we're not willing to accept that even despite all the examples of what happens when you go down this path of seeking to realize heaven on earth, a lot of people just aren't willing to accept that, you know, we live in a fallen world, we live in a broken world, we live in a world of imperfect human beings. People don't like to hear that. People are always saying, well, they just did it wrong under Lenin. We will do it right because now we have a better sense of how to do it properly. And there's no recognition of this basic problem of hubris, that we try to be like God. And this is not a new problem, right? Because you go right back to the scriptures. You go back to Genesis. And what does Genesis say? What was the, why did the man eat of the tree? Because he thought he could be like God. And I think that's why, the core reason why we keep falling into this trap. We think that we can fix all the problems of the world and we should be trying to do it. And when you do that, that's hubristic, but it also indicates that you're trying to act like God. And that's a human problem that's been around from the beginning of time. And unfortunately, I think we're always going to run into this problem because that's a perpetual temptation for human beings that we seem unable to escape.
Finally, then, in a nutshell, what is the danger of politics become religion?
Well, there's many dangers. One is, of course, that we inevitably have our expectations dashed because not everything through politics turns out the way that we think it will. Many things go wrong. Some things will go wrong. Not everything will be realized. And then we get very angry. And we get angry and we start to identify those who disagree with us, not as people who we disagree with, but as enemies, as obstacles to change, as those who are holding things up. And they must be doing it because they have some sort of ulterior motive, and therefore we have to get rid of them, if not, destroy them. So that's one particular danger. The second danger, of course, is that people forget that religion is ultimately about transcendental things, and it's not primarily about this world. The transcendental has implications for how we live and act in this world. Of course it does. But to bring it down to earth, to immanentize the eschaton, turns us into people who try to build heaven on earth. And every time that has been tried, it results in suffering, in death, oppression, and some form of totalitarianism. So those are the sorts of worries I think I have when it comes to this tendency to absolutize politics or turn politics into religion or to ascribe to politics the claims and depths and issues that religion addresses. Unless we are willing to recognize that politics is not religion and religion is not politics, the two, they certainly have things to do with each other, but if we conflate the two, then we're going to go, then I think we're going to continue to run into deep polarization, deep tendencies to view other people we disagree with as enemies, and I think ultimately living in societies where people are angry and frustrated all the time.
Dr. Samuel Gregg is research director at the Acton Institute, author of several books including Becoming Europe and For God and Profit, and a recent column for the Catholic World Report titled How Politics Becomes Religion. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Gregg, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., it's our weekly media coverage of religion segment with syndicated columnist Terry Mattingly. We'll continue our series on dualities in the scriptures, discussing the Christian's identity, Christian, disciple, priest, with Dr. Alfonso Espinosa, author of The Issues Etc., Book of the Month for July, Faith That Sees Through Culture. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.